The great playwright George Bernard Shaw has been credited with the humorous remark, "America and Great Britain, two great countries, separated by a common language." Is this really possible, that two people who speak the same language can still completely misunderstand each other? Is there a difference between what is said and what is heard? Does it matter? Can it have disastrous results? Can it even be deadly? In this second episode, we are going to tackle the idea that it matters more what people hear than what it is you say.
Welcome to the CAP Knowledge Network podcast series, presented by our national director, Troy Graham. In this five-part series, Troy Graham will share his thoughts, views, and perspectives on fear, communication, culture and leadership. Episode number 2, Communication and Understanding. Is hearing something the same as understanding it?
Any language is a system of symbols and rules that is used for meaningful communication. But a system of communication has to meet certain criteria in order to be considered a language. There are three consistent building blocks for any language. The first components are called phonemes. These are the smallest units in a language. The next are morphemes, which are usually whole words, functional parts of words, such as prefixes, suffixes, and word stems. And lastly, syntax, which is the system of rules that governs how words can be arranged to form phrases and sentences. Now, issues can and will arise when the language is used correctly, but is ambiguous, vague, or not within the accepted context. Just because you're using language does not mean you're communicating. What may be completely clear to you is totally opaque to the person you're speaking to. What's needed for clear communication is the addition of cultural context. This happens when a group agrees to the definition and usage of words and phrases. And this is the tricky part. What may be completely understandable to one group is a complete mystery to another group. I'll give you an example. My wife's best friend was born and raised in Scotland and immigrated to the state many years ago. When her family came to visit, she would witness this type of misunderstanding quite frequently. On one visit, her mother asked her, "What's block driving?" She was understandably confused. She had never heard of block driving in all of her years in the States. "I don't know. Why do you ask?" Her mother then explained that she had seen countless signs clearly stating, "Do not block drive." She clearly knew it was something she was not supposed to do. The issue was her and the sign maker had two different definitions for the word drive. For her, it was a verb. For them, it was a noun. Nowhere is this more prevalent than in heavy jargon environments. In the same company or organization, the same word or phrases can have two completely different meanings, depending on the department you're in. This creates a real problem and the first sign that the company, group, or organization doesn't have one cohesive, agreed-upon culture, but several separate and possibly competing ones. If you can't agree on what the information means, how can you effectively communicate? Anyone who has worked in a car dealership has been witness to the finance department and the accounting people, let's call it, vigorously debating over whether a deal has been funded or if it's still on the contract and transit list. You'll also likely have witnessed a customer becoming irate because they were promised a detail and the recon department presented them with a wash and vac. The first step to establishing a functional and strong culture is first agreeing to a shared language. There are many lighthearted examples of people being separated by a common language. From a missed meeting between British and American executives due to instructions stating they are to meet on the first floor, which in the US is the building's ground level, while in the UK is the next level up from the ground level entrance. There's even a street in Hong Kong named Rednaxala, which is the backwards writing of Alexander. While this may be a great set of names for a pair of fraternal twins, the mistake required changing nearly all of the maps that had been printed with the street as Alexander Terrace. What caused the misunderstanding? Western languages are written and read from left to right. The Chinese language is written and read from right to left. Most likely, a city clerk that didn't fully understand this accidentally transcribed the name Rednaxala rather than the correct Alexander. But, as we mentioned before, sometimes misunderstandings, ambiguity, and a lack of cultural understanding can have dire and even deadly results. It was April 1951, the height of the Korean War. A British Army unit was tasked with holding a hill that overlooked a strategically important river, which the opposing Chinese forces were attempting to cross. The situation was desperate. The British unit was outnumbered at least 8-1 and surrounded on all sides. But when the British Brigadier reported the situation to his American superior in the United Nations Joint Command, he did so with classic British understatement. He reported, "Things are a bit sticky, sir." Brigadier Tom Brody of the Gloucestershire Regiment had intended to convey they were in extreme difficulty. But the American general on the other end of the line had understood this to mean, "We're having a bit of a tough time, but we're holding the line." Upon hearing what he thought he heard, the general came to the decision there was no need to reinforce or withdraw them. Not yet, anyway. He told the British commander to hold the line and promised no reinforcements and ordered no retreat. With no extra support promised, the Gloucestershires fell back to a hill overlooking the river. For 4 days, they held off 30,000 Chinese troops trying to surge across the river, killing 10,000 of them. When they did try to withdraw, it was too late. More than 500 of them were captured and spent years in Chinese camps. 59 were killed or missing, and only 39 escaped. Is it possible that this terrible outcome could have been avoided? What if the British Brigadier had told his American officer in language he understood, "Sir, all hell is breaking loose"? What if the general had taken the time to ask for clarification, more information, or what if he had better understanding of classic British understatement? Could this disastrous loss of life and imprisonment been avoided, or at least diminished? Now, for most of us, we'll hopefully never be in a position where the stakes are so high. But the lesson here is simply stating something in the same language isn't the same as communicating information. The nuances, agreements, cultural understanding is just as, if not more so, critical to effective communication. In our everyday lives as leaders, managers, supervisors, or client advisors, we use words and phrases that do more to confuse the person we're talking to rather than enlightening them or conveying usable and actionable information. This leads to, at worst, conflict, and at best misunderstanding that create the wrong conditions we need to achieve our goals. Our first task in building a strong culture must be to create an environment free of ambiguity. Simply put, ambiguity means open to interpretation or having multiple meanings. This isn't only important in our businesses, but in our personal relationships as well. The cornerstone of any relationship is communication. If two people are saying one thing and each hears something different, it won't take long for that relationship to begin to break down. So how do we establish clarity and remove ambiguity from our communications? Let's review the critical 9 areas we must focus on. Number 1, start with an awareness that words or phrases may have different meanings. The first step is to engage and ask your people their definition of your company's most commonly used business words and phrases. This is known as defining the obvious. I was working as an assistant used car manager at a Toyota store in Dallas. Each day, shortly before noon, my GSM would ring my extension and ask, "Are we open?" My reply was, "Absolutely. We are set and ready, ballooned up, calling the logs, verifying appointments, and the team is hot on the trail." It wasn't until my second week that the used car director pulled me aside. He asked if I'd noticed if the GSM was aggravated with me. I answered he seemed chilly, but we were having a good month, so I didn't think much of it. "You should," he said. "The one thing he can't stand is a liar or a faker. Every morning you tell him we're open, but we seldom do our first deal before 2:00. That's when it hit me. He wasn't asking if we were open, meaning ready to do business. He was asking if we were open, meaning we had already generated a sale for the day. Needless to say, my time at that store was limited. I never recovered from being labeled as a faker or a liar, and the guy who puts smoke on the board. And there you have it. Another word that means a paragraph to me, but anyone outside of the car business or sales business may be completely unaware of the concept of smoking the board. It's when you claim to have a deal or an appointment, but in reality, it's written in smoke, waiting for the lightest of breezes to make it disappear. So today, ask your people to define some quite common phrases, words. You might find that nearly everyone has their own specific and different definitions. Number 2, learn to be explicit, intentional, and direct in your instructions. Avoid would, could, and should when what you really mean is now, must, don't, and required. Now, this doesn't mean you have to remove politeness or courtesy from your conversations. What it does mean is you say what you mean and you mean what you say. This is a learned skill, and most of us sometimes struggle with it. Ultimately, it requires the use of tact. Winston Churchill once defined tact as telling someone to go to hell, and they actually look forward to the trip. This is all about being overly clear, but doing so in a way that your communication is accepted by the listener. To be honest, this is one of my greatest challenges because it requires not only the words you use, but your voice inflection, as well as your body language. We have all been taught that only 7 to 10% of communication is verbal. The other 90% or so is visual and emotional. You need to connect with the person you are speaking with and carefully watch how what you are saying is being received. This is where ambiguity has a chance to slide in. Don't confuse being tactful with being indirect. Don't resort to using weasel words. Weasel words are vague qualifiers like generally, most, and they will ultimately weaken your message. Number three, agree to and be consistent with your words, measurements, goals, definitions, and vocabulary. Back in the late 1990s, NASA launched a mission to Mars called the Martian Climate Orbiter. As part of this mission, the orbiter would deploy a lander to the surface of the planet for scientific measurements. Now, keep in mind, we are literally talking about rocket scientists here. The group had planned, designed, and built a system where the lander and the orbiter would work together and then send that info back to Earth. All for the low, low price of $328 million. This roughly broke down to $193 million for the spacecraft development, $92 million for launching it, and $43 million for mission operations. It was successfully launched on December 11, 1998, and on September 23, 1999, communication with the spacecraft was permanently lost. The spacecraft encountered Mars on a trajectory that brought it too close to the planet, and it was either destroyed in the atmosphere or escaped the planet's vicinity and entered an orbit around our sun. So what happened? Well, these rocket scientists never agreed to a consistent set of measurements. While the orbiter team used the metric system, the lander team opted for using the imperial system. Yet both teams assumed the other team was using the same unit of measurement. The result was a set of measurement problems from the very start of the launch and mission. Over time, these errors accumulated and brought the MCO over 100 miles closer to Mars than intended. The result? $300 million of our tax dollars either ended up as a smudge on the red planet or is currently buzzing around the sun. A critical step to avoiding ambiguity is to agree to a clear and well-communicated set of definitions, measurements, and goals, and then stay consistent. Most importantly, when in doubt, reach out. Number four, the placement of words in a sentence lends itself to different interpretations, especially when communicating in memos, emails, and text. The all-time classic example of an ambiguous sentence comes from the great Groucho Marx. One morning I shot an elephant in my pajamas. How he got in my pajamas, I have no idea. A more common example was an email my team and I received from one of the owners at a previous job. The email stated, "I've never seen numbers quite like this before." As you can imagine, it wasn't long before my team started asking, "What do they mean by that?" Another example was receiving an email from a project lead stating, "I want the teams to pick different areas to present this week. You should take gross or volume and wholesale loss. Let me know what you decide." We ended up playing paper, scissors, rocks on who was going to reply and ask for clarification. Be clear, concise, and make the choice of answer and your intention obvious. Number five, use pronouns carefully. My favorite YouTube channel, CinemaSins, calls this the pronoun game. Make sure you are defining who you, them, us, he, she is. Sending a distribution list email or speaking to a group and saying you need to XYZ is a guaranteed way to make sure no one takes charge of it. Again, be clear, concise, and make the choice of answer and your intention obvious. Avoid abbreviation acronyms, and jargon all together. Once I had a sales manager email a customer, "Would you take a FWD in the same color if I could DT for it?" The customer immediately replied, "That would be great. Can I come in next Saturday and pick it up?" The result? A one-star review on Facebook. And comments that read like this: "Don't buy from these guys. Liars and time wasters. They offered me a four-wheel drive Explorer at a discount, but when I arrived, after driving 2 hours, they showed me a two-wheel drive and told me that because they had to ship it in, they couldn't give me the same type of deal." Do you see what happened? My manager, when he typed FWD, knew he was referring to front-wheel drive. And when he typed DT, he knew it meant dealer trade. But the customer read FWD and thought it meant four-wheel drive. And DT, customer assumed it meant discount. So we had an upset customer, a poor review, along with a $500 transport bill and a two-wheel drive Explorer in upstate New York at the end of November. Abbreviations, acronyms, and jargon create a perfect environment for ambiguity and misunderstanding. Again, be clear, concise, and make the choice of answer and your intention obvious. Number 7, in written communication, use short phrases that go straight to the point. Make text very easy to read and make both as brief as possible. A survey by Polite Mail of 56 million internal email messages found that although 77% of employees opened internal emails, just 37% of recipients read those messages. And just 24% bothered to click through to see if there were any links or messages. Employees really aren't reading your email. And when they are, most are skimming or scanning through it. Email should be used to send advanced information or to be used as reference for follow-up conversations. It should not be used for communication regarding development, policy, or direction. Number 9, never use absolutes or sarcasm. Two ways to make sure your listeners immediately stop listening is to use an absolute or make a comment dripping in sarcasm. When you say always or never when referring to an event, action, or behavior, you immediately lose credibility. You also open yourself up for a challenge. And as far as sarcasm goes, well, this is my personal number one challenge. Sarcasm has two accepted definitions. The first, a mode of expression intended to arouse amusement, while the second is a mode of satirical wit known for its effect on bitter, caustic, and often ironic language that is usually directed against an individual, often as a sharp, satirical, or ironic utterance designed to cut or give pain. See the problem? While I may intend my comment to create amusement or lighten an otherwise heavy conversation, the person I'm speaking with can perceive it as an attack and as an effort on my part to inflict pain. While this mode of speaking worked well for me while I was growing up and in my early years in the business, once I had a role of authority and responsibility, it had just a terrible effect on the relationships that are necessary to become really successful. This type of language can only be used when two people fully trust each other and both have an assumption of righteous intent. If you haven't built a strong relationship of trust, vulnerability, and deep understanding, this mode of communication can have disastrous effects on your ability to lead. Lastly, always ask for review, recap, and agreement. This last part is critical. Don't assume that what you just said is what was just heard. The best way to do this is to ask the person you're speaking with to repeat back what they heard. A lighter touch would be to summarize your thoughts in one sentence and get agreement on the critical points. The worst way to do this is ask, "Does that make sense?" You are just as likely to get a false yes as you are a request for clarity or someone to admit they have no idea what you're talking about. So there you go. The phenomena of vague, ambiguous, and biting communication is far too prevalent at the management, supervisor, and senior levels of too many companies and organizations. This can result in common words like accountability, leadership, transparency, analysis, pivot, customer or employee satisfaction, delegate, engagement, empathy, empowerment, inspiration, motivation, development, cohesion, culture, and humility end up being meaningless or open to individual or foggy interpretations. We need to understand that individual definitions are formed and cemented by each individual's mentors, experience, education, previous culture, and even their faith. But this can also happen in our personal lives. And while our jobs are important, what really matters are the people closest to us. If we aren't communicating, if we are talking at each other and not with each other, we have no hope of long-term success. These tips are just as important for friends and family as they are for businesses and organizations. The first step in moving from a group of individuals to one strong, cohesive team, or to make a needed cultural shift in your organization or relationships, is to make sure you understand what each of your words means to the people around you. And then work towards an agreement with everyone on what they're going to be defined as going forward. So if we have agreed that to grow and shift or redesign a culture, that the first step is defining the most important set of words, what would be the most obvious place to start? I would contend it begins with the thing itself, culture. That does it for this episode. I welcome you to follow this series as we explore more about culture, context, connection, and collaboration. Until next time, I hope you're enjoying this podcast and thank you for sticking around while I grow and mature on this platform. And remember, it's not what you say, it's what people hear.
Thank you for joining us. We depend on listeners like you to promote and grow our channels. Please be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you like what you heard, disagree with it, or have some input, we invite you to add your comments, reviews and ratings below. Would you like more Cap Knowledge Network? Then toddle off and spy us out on YouTube, on our Cap Knowledge Network video channel. There you will find videos, interviews, a few quick hits, along with some of our curated content. Thank you, and have a splendid day.